Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mindshifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love. In Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
Hi, and welcome to Mindshifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm your co-host, Jeannie Rice, and we welcome you to the show. Today is Monday, May the 12th, 2014. Our call-in number is 646-200-4169. Press 1, and that puts you in queue to talk to us. And we'd love to hear your comments and your questions because that makes this your show. Today is our second parent-teacher talk radio show on which we're doing on Mondays from now on, and we hope that everybody had an awesome Mother's Day yesterday. And Michael asked me to read something that we have this posted on our Wagon Facebook, and it's titled Just a Mom? A woman renewing her driver's license at the county clerk's office was asked by the woman recorder to state her occupation. She hesitated, uncertain how to classify herself. What I mean is, explained the recorder, do you have a job or are you just a... Of course I have a job, snapped the woman. I'm a mom. Well, we don't list mom as an occupation. Housewife covers it, said the recorder emphatically. I forgot all about her story until one day I found myself in the same situation, this time at our own town hall. We've got a little echo going on here, Michael. I don't know if you're not on mute. I forgot all about her story until one day I found myself in the same situation, this time at our own town hall. The clerk was obviously a career woman, poised, efficient, and possessed of a high-sounding title like official interrogator or town registrar. What is your occupation, she probed. What made me say it? I don't know. The word simply popped out. I'm a research associate in the field of child development and human relations. The clerk paused, ballpoint pen frozen in midair, and she looked up as though she had not heard right. I repeated the title slowly, emphasizing the most significant words. Then I stared with wonder as my pronouncement was written in bold black ink on the official questionnaire. Might I ask, said the clerk with new interest, just what do you do in your field? Coolly, without any trace of fluster in my voice, I heard myself reply, I have a continuing program of research, what mother doesn't, in the laboratory and in the field, normally I would say indoors and out. I'm working for my master's, first for the Lord and then the whole family, and I already have 4 credits, all 4 of them are daughters. Of course, the job is one of the most demanding in the humanities. Any mother care to disagree? And I often work 14 hours a day. 24 is more like it. But the job is more challenging than most run-of-the-mill careers, and the rewards are more of a satisfaction rather than just money. There was an increasing note of respect in the clerk's voice as she completed the form, stood up, and personally ushered me to the door. As I drove into our driveway, buoyed up by my glamorous new career, I was greeted by my lab assistants, ages 13, 7, and 3. Upstairs, I could hear our new experimental model, a 6-month-old baby, in the child development program testing out a new vocal pattern. I felt I had scored a beat on bureaucracy, and I had gone on the official records as someone more distinguished and indispensable to mankind than, quote, just another mom, unquote. Motherhood, what a glorious career, especially when there's a title on the door. Does this make grandmothers senior research associates in the field of child development and human relations and great-grandmothers executive senior research associates? I think so. And also, I think it makes aunts associate research assistants. Please send this to another mom, grandmother, aunt, and other friends that you know. Thank you. Welcome, Michael. And welcome, Suzanne.
Hello, all.
Michael.
Hi.
Hey there, young lady. How are you?
Wonderful.
Well, good. Well, happy Mother's Day. I hope it was a wondrous one yesterday for you and for all the moms in the audience, Jeannie, and everybody included.
Absolutely. We celebrate for a whole weekend. I hope everybody got at least 2 days of fun out of it.
Cool. Cool. Well, we're delighted that you're here. We're delighted to be setting in motion this parent-teacher talk Mondays on Mindshifters Radio. It is an awesome opportunity. I've gotten lots of feedback from people from last week's show and just loving the clarification of the whole process of especially this topic of discipline and parenting in general. So we're just delighted that you're here, Dr. Tim. We certainly welcome you, sir. How do you be today?
Mother?
Say it again.
I am doing beautifully, thank you. Had a fabulous weekend with my mother.
Awesome. Very cool. And Julie, are you with us today? Are you with us, Julie?
I am.
Well, good. Welcome. And happy Mother's Day to you. Although I know you have no biological children, you have so many children that you've mothered that it's amazing.
Yes. Yes, I've been part of that motherhood.
Yes, for sure. For sure. Well, it's a delight to have everybody here. We're honored that each person who chooses to join us each day has done that and is with us. And, of course, every one of us have been parented. So this whole idea of parent talk and teacher talk is, I think, an important issue from whichever perspective we take it, the way we were parented, the way we were taught by some of the teachers. I remember doing a workshop up in Hartford City, Indiana, that I used to do on an annual basis at a Catholic retreat center, and the nun who ran the center had been a school teacher, and we were doing a codependence to interdependence intensive, and we got into the power person dynamic and how she had been treated by her power person, and she just broke down into tears when she realized that she had used what they called corporal punishment with children, and that it was just a replicating of a pattern from the generations and what she had been taught. And as she realized what she had done, the tears, the grief, it was just huge to watch her process through that and her regret at not having known better. So to me, the purpose of this is that with the experience of all of these genius minds that we've got gathering every Monday, that we can perhaps help uplift each other, uplift ourselves, and anyone who hasn't had the opportunity to look differently at parenting, oftentimes because of the power person dynamic that shows up and how behaviors are formed in relationship to a power person. And when that power person is under stress, most parents who generally speaking are power persons are not, unfortunately, consciously parenting, as you're working on supporting people doing, Suzanne, which I think is awesome. And when they're not, then certain dynamics are instilled in the child that tend to run the whole child's life. And one of the lead points that I'd like to put in. I was rereading your post on mymommymanual.com, Suzanne. It's interesting to look at the references to punishment and how there's a presumption in our culture that if somebody does something quote-unquote unacceptable, that they be labeled and that they be punished. There was a gentleman who responded to the post that we did last week from Michelle, and I'd like to read his response and then a couple of thoughts from some of the folks who were responding to your blog, Suzanne. This gentleman says, there are no universal rules of parenting except one, love. Love, the single common in all cultures. For in real life, things do vary from person to person, place to place, thing to thing. Hence, every mother and father has his or her own specific reasons for adopting a certain style or method that may include hurting as a matter of correcting wayward behavior in their child. And it amazes me to hear someone who speaks of love and in the same paragraph then says that, well, a method you may choose to correct the child might be hurting. And the response that I offered to this gentleman, and I haven't heard back from him, is the problem with correcting wayward behavior through hurting a child is that will never bring the child back to its essence, love, which is where the problem of the wayward child lies. Person in existence to bring a child back to love, if the parent is living there, love I offer is not capable of hurting, only a hurting person hurts others. And then there are a couple of lines in people who are responding to your post, which is on our website, or pardon me, it is on the website and it is on our Facebook page. But when you have a child that repeatedly does the same unacceptable thing and does not respond to other forms of punishment, sometimes banking this dance is this presumption that punishment is what's needed. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Oh, I do. Thank you. And where I usually start is E, all of the above, with my classes, because this comes up quite a bit. People love when we're talking generalities around positive parenting. They're really down with it. I get it. Their head's going up and down. They get the love. And then we get into their specific trigger. And at times, the love can go out the window to the challenge. And in the challenge moment, they're thinking, I can't let this be in my child. I need to stop it. I need to stomp it out. I need to discipline it. And I generally like to go back to sharing with them, have you had the experience where you're with them, your child is, quote, misbehaving? We define misbehavior as an unmet need right from the get-go. So I have them write that down. Misbehavior equals an unmet need. And so they'll share the, quote, misbehavior. And I'll ask, have you ever had the experience where you're with them, you're centered, you're there, you're at zero, and then all of a sudden you go to 100, and zero to 100, you lose it. And a lot of my parents say, yes, I have. And they say, well, I tried being nice. I tried asking. I tried sharing how that made me feel. I tried all of those things, and it didn't work, and that's when I lost it. And that's when I, you know, yelled or put them in timeout, or, you know, that's when I want to spank them. And so, you know, it's interesting that they have the experience generally when that's happening, they go from zero to 100. So first we just identify that. That's where the parent is in the midst of misbehavior quite often. Many of us can remember, you know, feeling that way. And then I like to go back to a very simple definition of what is positive parenting, or what is parenting from the root word disciple, which is to lead and guide by example. It is both firm and respectful. Two simple words, firm and respectful. And the respectful comes of love. Now, the permissive parenting that people confuse with positive parenting is not firm, but it is respectful. And so I like to give that definition right out. What we're talking about is firm and respectful. And what we're not talking about is permissive parenting, which is, oh, go ahead and do that because I don't have any boundaries or any ways to teach you other. And I love you and I want to come from love, so I'm going to stay respectful in the midst of this teaching moment, but I'm not able to actually teach you because I'm immobilized out of fear that I'm going to hurt you because I was hurt as a child. So I don't have any tools right now. So I can't really be firm with you and guide you. And so that tends to live for a lot of people. They can see where, you know, when I was hanging out, when they go from 0 to 100, I didn't have any tools to put in place. So I was kind of begging or pleading or conjoining or wishing, but really no tool was in place to help my child learn. And so I got really irritated, and I went from 0 to 100, and I ended up doing autocratic, which is firm and not respectful. So I can put a visual on the Y Facebook page later today, and it's very simple, and I'm a very visual learner, but it has autocratic is firm and not respectful, permissive is not firm and respectful, and then the positive parenting, or we could rename it, but the parenting I believe that we're sharing is both firm and respectful. And right away now we're talking about E, all of the above. How do I deal with this moment? Okay, it's not a two-sentence answer. And, you know, that's what we're going into in the course of 6 hours. And, you know, we do have answers to the very specific things people are challenged with. But sometimes it's not so simple and sewn up in a one neat little, you know, five-word answer. So that's what I would first share.
Oftentimes I watch the parent who they think they're being respectful, but what they're really doing is they're enabling inappropriate behavior. You know, I can't confront my child, and I confuse enabling with respectful.
Mm-hmm.
And enabling is the kind of behavior that allows the child to move forward with something that is inappropriate in a certain circumstance, because the parent having, you know, within their own minds the confusion of the type of parenting that they had, it's difficult or virtually impossible for them to understand how to do anything else besides that enabling.
Yes, and so many people get that they want a parent. This is how they come to my class. They create out of avoidance. I don't want to parent the way that I was parented. That's more common than I want to parent from my center. I want to parent of love. I want to lead and guide by example. Those words are very rare walking into the class, and that's okay, whatever gets you there. And mostly it's I don't want to do what was done to me. And that's usually where we're starting, that there's a parent that has an awareness that I'd like to do other. Sometimes I get that, I'd like to do other than the way I was parented. But that's where we're starting, is we have what we have, and it comes back to, much of our parenting comes back to precognitive cellular memory. And when we go 0 to 100, it goes right past the brain. There's no thought process around it. It's cellular. It's reflex. It is genetic. It is many, many, many generations of conditioning or experiences that we're holding in that moment. And that's why it's such an awesome, powerful opportunity for healing both the generations before us and after us and our own, you know, generations.
Sure. One of the things we go into in the laws of living is how thoughts, words, and behaviors are relegated to the unconscious mind and are controlling from the unconscious mind. It's interesting. The only language on the planet that I know of, the Aramaic, is a language that has a suffix. When you add it to a word, it indicates that that particular, the word that particular suffix is attached to, controlling both perception and behavior from the unconscious level. And one of the other challenges that I see with parenting with, you know, with hitting is that the child who is has an unmet need, and that is maybe the need to be recognized, the need to be touched, the need to be loved, the need to be hugged, I think can end up finding themselves in a lifelong cycle of what I quote misbehavior, because in one of the points that a couple of the parents made on your blog when they responded to your article was how, yes, well, after we hit our child, we then have lots of love and hugs. And it's a real danger because we know that when one is under stress, whatever is experienced to reduce the stress goes into the unconscious and becomes automatic behavior. So there's the danger that the child is feeling lonely, I need to be touched, I'll misbehave because after I misbehave, I'm going to get hugged and taken care of and petted. I'm going to get, quote, unquote, what I need. And so their misbehavior ultimately leads. There's a huge danger there that I think most people are not even considering, and unfortunately because we don't know how or we haven't been taught, you know, back to that idea of properly taught, that you know, the average parent can't properly teach their children because they can't teach what they haven't been taught, especially when the stress is up. And it's hard to think outside the lines drawn by our own power person, the one that had more power over our lives than we did and was not functioning out of love. And if that power person didn't teach us, it's hard to pass on what we didn't get. Or what perhaps isn't in our genes yet. And so to me, that's just one of the most awesome parts of what you're doing is giving that alternative way of thinking and understanding that the average person can't achieve on their own because they're so locked into the emotional turmoil and those lines drawn by their power person's behavior.
Mm-hmm. After last week's radio show, we talked about the power person, and it was my last class of this class on intuition, and I'm going to work it into class four, which is on power, but I didn't want to let this class out the door without having touched on it, because I realized and recognized the real significance that talking about that has for parents, and it's amazing the understanding how quickly your work is coming to people. It is versus like 20 years ago. I'm sure all the teachers out there are experiencing it. But there's a conductiveness and a receptivity there and an understanding that's pretty neat to see. And not the resistance, you know, where some things were met with some questioning eyes or can you define that? And I'm getting this real absorptivity going on with people, with your work, with the power person specifically. And, you know, it was very simple. I just stated that we each have one in our lives and everybody's heads are going up and down, you know, and then the natural link is, well, so do our children. You know, if we all have that experience and there's 15 of us adults in the room, does our child, you know, have a power person in their world, and who is that and how is that creating and what belief systems are they creating about themselves? And one invitation I have for parents around that is it's very simple. And I find parents like little tools that are very simple they can walk away with and sink their teeth into, and it is this. Every interaction you have with your child, when they walk away from you, ask yourself, what is the belief they have about themselves based on my little interaction there? Let's say we were making muffins together, measuring the flour, and they were making a mess, and I said, here, no, let me do that for you. Take it away. And they walk away. What is the belief my child has just formed in the quiet of her mind about herself from our interaction? Or if we're talking about what we're going to do this weekend and it ends up, you know, in a upset and the child wants something else and I say, I don't want to hear it, go to your room. What, when they walk away, what do they make up? What's the story they're making up about themselves? Is it that I am powerful, that I am love, or is it some other story? And it's really amazing to just take on one 24-hour day of interacting with your children that way. Every time you're together and then you separate, what's the story and you answer that. What is the story you believe your child is making up about them based on that interaction? Parents seem to really, really take that on and enjoy that as for the insight that that gives them.
Awesome, awesome question to ask. One of the tools that Julie has in her book on healing children, loving children, is the love chair. Julie, maybe you'd share a little bit about how you developed that and just how the love chair works, and it fits so perfectly with the question that you're asking here of what does the child take away from it. Julie?
Yes, I developed the love chair as, you know, if you remember in the past, there used to be a timeout chair or actually the dunce chair. So where someone was penalized because of some sort of interaction within the classroom or outside in the hall, whatever. And so I decided that the love chair would be something where it would be a timeout for the child to think about what was going on and how they were off target and what was going on, and then they could maybe, you know, actually absorb some love from the love chair. And the left chair had a chair pocket on it, so it was, you know, it displayed the word love on it.
Mm-hmm.
And let me tell you about a situation. Is that okay, Michael? Okay, well, the left chair really was very effective. And it was so effective that one day this little girl came in and she immediately sat down on the left chair. And, you know, we were starting class, and she didn't do anything. She didn't take off her coat. She didn't put her book bag away, nothing. Just sat right down on the love chair. And so the love chair is pretty close to my desk. So I went on with the morning routine. The children went to breakfast and so on, and she was still sitting on that love chair. And then, you know, the children came back from breakfast, and she's still sitting on the love chair. And we passed out the papers, and, you know, I went over to her, and I said, hey, what's going on? You want to take off your jacket, maybe put up your book bag? She said, you know, I was thinking about it. I was having a really bad morning with my mom, and I just really couldn't wait to get into school and sit on this love chair so I didn't take out my anger on the other children. And I was, like, so amazed that she was so mature. And so I said, well, how do you feel now? She goes, well, I feel a little better, and I think I'll go ahead and hang up my coat and my book bag. So she went back to work with the class, but she used it in such a way, you know, that I was just impressed. I mean, I wouldn't have even thought about that. And so what happened with my class is when children were, let's say, not following the rules, we're doing a particular activity, they're not following the rules, I might say, you know, hey, John, do you need to go over and sit on the left chair for a while, take some time out? You know, because it seems to me that you're not following the rules. Now, they would either say, no, I really want to stay with the activity. I said, okay, well, then remember what the rules are. Otherwise, you know, sometimes they might choose to actually go over and sit on the left chair if they really think they're off target. So it became something that they actually used without my suggestion. And sometimes I did have to suggest it.
And then when they were in a left chair, everybody was consciously, purposely beaming love to them, right? Rather than punishment, rather than what's wrong with you. And it echoes that to me, story that you tell in your blog, Suzanne, on mymommymanual.com, where you talk about the African tribe, where when somebody does something wrong, everybody gathers and speaks to them in loving terms about the wonderful person that they are and the things that they've done.
Absolutely. It's all what we put our energy into, creative energy. What are we creating? And with our children, if we are identifying an off the mark, like Julie, like you use so well with your kids, we are just the guide rails on the highway, helping them stay the course. And we're just sort of an outer reflection back to them that they're going off course or they're off the mark. That's our job, you know, and their job really for us. And we invite each other back on course. And so having a love chair or a ritual, there's so much power in ritual because it helps children and parents, us as adults, go to a safe place and go to the part of our brain that can learn and teach and be patient, and the cognitive part of our brain versus the brainstem. And so whether it's a love chair or another word parents use, some parents are calling them timeouts, and what I've heard of late is we call them time-ins. And just within the name change, it sets up the child to feel like you are, Julie, with your love chair, inclusive and supported versus put out. So it's a time-in, and it helps parents, because really timeouts have gotten a bad rap. You know, the underpinning of timeout is a wonderful thing. It's feedback on, you know, being off the mark or in error or off target, and a chance to restore love. But the way it's been used is as a punishment and put in time out of anger, and, you know, with a lot of angry words. And the experience doesn't feel so supportive for kids to go in time out. But when you relabel it as a time in, and you allow the child to feel powerful in the experience. So when Julie's saying, do you need, would you like, could you benefit from the love chair or time in, the child is now enrolled to be an active participant in their growth. Yes, I really could. Or, you know what, no, that was all I needed was that invitation, and now I've self-corrected and I'm back, and I can participate with the group. So that's a little tool for parents, is just simply reshape the tool you might already be using called a timeout, call it a time in. And the nice thing to do is set it up with your kids when you're not triggered, when neither of you are in the need moment. Talk about what is a time in and how you're going to use it, just like I'm sure Julie does with her classroom. She doesn't just pull these things out of thin air. They've been discussed in circle time, and they've been co-created. And that's something that we can do as parents, is when we're not needing the tool, to set it up with our kids intentionally with them, because they're powerful and they need to know it, and they're going to get on board, and they're going to be really showing you a whole new level of responsiveness to your gentle guidance, which is, is it time for a time in? Do you need a time in? Or you need a time in. It's time for a time in, you know.
One of the sort of measuring sticks that I've come up with for behavior for myself is, and this is across the board, not just with children, but, you know, the question we ask at the beginning of the Why Is This Happening to Me Then workshop is, how many have ever held a newborn child, and describe the essence of the newborn? And everybody's descriptor is some variation on the theme of love. And if we think in terms of that active presence of love that the child is, can I imagine a newborn child doing the behavior, thinking the way that I'm about to think? If I can't, I probably shouldn't be doing it. If I can imagine a newborn child doing that, then perhaps I'm right on track, and that would be a behavior that would be appropriate.
Yes. The newborn child, remembering who we are love, and remembering a moment where you held or first met, if you adopted or foster parents, your child, that love present, that is a wonderful exercise to do on a regular basis. And with teenagers, I invite parents, before they enter into any of these tools or, you know, to feel like they're being challenged, to take a moment and remember the first time they met their child and held their child or the child's birth, because it just has this magic ability to pull you back to love. And then whatever you say or do filters through that, and it's much more likely to be of love than even what is so in your face in that moment. So that's a powerful memory to pull up.
Cool. Dr. Tim, do you have anything to share with us on this topic?
I'm too busy taking notes.
Okay. Well, I know you've done a lot with parenting, so.
In one of my books, I wrote that in my freshman year, of high school, they still allowed corporal punishment. And in every classroom, this is a Catholic school, so they were based in love, and in every classroom there was a wooden paddle. And in the classrooms that were, the teacher was a coach, the paddles would also have holes drilled in them, because on your naked buttocks it hurt even more with the holes in there. And so in the summer, after my freshman year of high school, they passed a law in the state that outlawed corporal punishment. And so by the time we graduated as seniors and I went back to school that next, you know, homecoming, the school was basically up for grabs. And what I wrote about was, here was a system that had some continuity. And then they reached in and took out the only form of restriction or discipline, and they didn't put anything else in its place. And so here were all these teachers that all they knew how to do was threaten the paddle or use the paddle, and now all of a sudden the paddle was gone. And so if anybody was acting in their classroom the way they didn't want them to, all they had left was screaming or sending them to the principal, and the principal couldn't do what the principal used to do. So the system fell apart. And I really liked what Suzanne was saying about how this is about parenting with firmness and respect. And when I wrote the Parenting Power Struggle Handbook, I said, listen, this is just the idea of what a power struggle is, and how you can get in one, how you get out of one, how you recognize you're in one, and how you avoid them in the future, is just a technology. You can use it to apply the rules, whatever rules or structure you want in your house. You can be as lenient a parent as you want, and you can be as strict a parent as you want. And you never have to hit anybody. You never have to yell at anybody. But now here's a set of tools to let you think about how to teach whatever structure you, as parents, wish to teach in your house. So it's all right in line with what I've been working with, and it's fabulous to hear that it's blending in even more of, because when I was writing this stuff, I didn't know about the power person dynamic and the, I mean, I had a different word for it, and it wasn't as well defined, and I didn't know about the worksheet process, and so I'm just having fun listening.
Cool. Julie, do you have any more thoughts at this moment?
No, not at all.
I have a thought, if I might interject. And it's about this thing. It's about boundaries. And I find that is a really helpful thing for all of us in our relationships. And Michael, you talk a lot about boundaries in your codependence, or creating dependence. How do you call, what's the title of the
codependence, interdependence?
Interdependence, yes. So we start with the boundary week. When you have a limit set in place and yet your child treats it as if this limit is optional or altogether not required, your boundaries are being crossed, but why and what can you do about it? And the next thing we ask is, does no mean no, yes, sometimes, or maybe? And I use all done a lot instead of no, because kids tend to get, like, all done. And so I already define with parents that, you know, there are many creative ways to say no that are much easier to receive. And we were walking in the classroom one day, and it was a yoga studio. We are to take our shoes off when we go into the yoga studio. And as we were going in, I said, oh, we have to take our shoes off. They don't allow shoes, so you need to put your shoes on that wall. And then I paused, and I said, I shifted it, and I said, they like bare feet in the yoga studio, so would you please put your shoes on the wall? And so they got to feel what the difference, and we sat and we talked about how that felt like you need, we can't, you have to, okay? And just a very simple tweak of the words set as an invitation, you know, please put your shoes on the wall. We like bare feet in the room. And so sometimes having a clear boundary, and then using words and actions that are in line with each other is what is required for the child to get behind it. And so if they're not getting behind your boundary, if you can get really intentional, sit down, write what the boundary is, write where the breakdown is, what's actually happening, and then see if you can get underneath it and make sure your actions and your words support each other. Because I can say in a very nice way, would you please put your shoes on the wall, but my energy is really irritated. So would you please put your shoes on the wall, okay? My child walks away with the energy. And that sometimes is a neat thing to get underneath is how am I feeling about it, and that's where the worksheets come in. But, you know, there's so many nuances to our words and our actions. Are they in support of one another? And what place do they come from when we give them to our children in support of one of our boundaries?
Great point. One of the things we talk about and why is this happening to me again is that we have this mind of being, the newborn child, that absolute awesome presence of love. And then, you know, another question that we ask at the beginning of the Why Is This Happening to Me Again workshop is, how many have ever done something they regret? And the list that comes out of regret when we ask people to identify what they were feeling that motivated them to do what they regret is always based in some form of hostility or fear. And we point out what we call the non-being mind. There's the mind of being and the non-being mind. And the non-being mind knows everything that it doesn't want. Parent says, don't touch. What fires in the child's mind is simply exactly what the instruction is, and that's touch. The body of a statement always produces a result that's like the body of the statement. If I say, don't talk to me like that again, then the child says, well, the word don't doesn't mean anything. So, of course, that's not a conscious thing, but what they hear is, talk to me like that again. And so the child does exactly what it's been told. When the parent is in resistance, the child does exactly what it's been told, and then it wonders why it gets punished for doing what it's been told to do. And that conflict, the non-being mind, always knows what it doesn't want. And if the parent really wants to create a world with a child that is in harmony with what the parent really wants, then the parent has to get clear and start to think and language in terms of what it does want, your example of the bare feet, as opposed to what it doesn't want, because the doesn't want is an energy that tends to guide the child. When we are clear and we train our own mind as parents, then the child is happy to cooperate. But if we give them a message that is about what we don't want, then the child is still happy to cooperate and deliver exactly what it is that we've asked for.
That brought Julie, do you have a story to share, or Tim?
Well, I just wanted to say, in terms of boundaries, I tell people that my definition of boundaries is everything I say and do that educates the people around me as to what I feel is acceptable and unacceptable. And people get all excited and they think, wow, that's great. You mean I can actually structure things to say and do that lets people know what I like and what I want? That's fabulous. They get a little bit deflated when I tell them the other half of it is, everything I say and do educates the people around me about what I think is acceptable and not acceptable. So I can make this whole thing about how I want to teach my kids to tell the truth and never lie and all that good stuff. And then the phone rings and they pick up the phone and they say, hey, Dad, it's for you. And I say, tell them I'm in the bathroom. Tell them I'm not home. And that educates my children about my boundaries, that it's okay to lie in some situations and not others.
Yes, and our children are little scientists, And they've come to know that our actions speak louder than our words. So if there's an inconsistency, they throw out the words and they go with the actions 100% of the time. They're going to look to your way of being versus the lip service. You give something. So when parents are struggling with children that are really pushing boundaries, I like to ask them, how consistent are you? Well, not very. I feel like I'm not very is what I hear a lot. And we then look at how brilliant their child is. Their child wants to keep testing until they know definitively the brick wall, the boundary. They want to meet the wall. They're looking for that security for the boundaries. And if they keep toppling the boundaries over, you better believe they're going to just keep marching forward until they meet up against that resistance. And so for the parent that's struggling, thinking, boy, my child is just really obstinate and really challenging me consistently all the time, one thing they can do is get really intentional about their boundaries and structure them and set them in place so that when they're challenged, they can be clear and consistent and positive and live into it, clear and consistent, and really embrace. And I think once they get permission to be firm and respectful, sometimes that's all it takes to say, you know what, I have permission to be firm. I give myself permission to be firm, and I know it's the greatest gift I can give my child. And after about a week of testing, our brilliant little scientist in the field goes, hey, you know what? That's serious. That wall right there, when she says sweets are for later and snacks before dinner end at 5, she meant it, or 4, or whatever it is, whatever the rule is. Like you said, Dr. Tim, those are for you to define. There's no one manual. And you, when you sit with what lives for you, there are some basic truths, but it's up to you to come to what works for you and your family. And when you come to those, if you can get behind them and be clear and consistent, all of a sudden, now there are some kids that just by nature are going to be testers more than other kids. But in general, those kids that are testers, they're leaders. Those are the kind that are really good and diligent at testing things. They respond when you are consistent with your limits. They're finally happy and appeased at a certain time. They meet up with the same wall, and they go, okay, that's firm. That's a firm boundary right there. I know my limits.
Well, you bring up another interesting point with your whole comment, Susan, and that's physicists tell us that every molecule in the universe is in continuous communication with every molecule in the universe. And, of course, the molecule doesn't have to say anything. It is an energetic link and an energetic connection. And when the parent holds, for instance, and especially if we've got two parents who are in agreement, holds that the child is obstinate, guess what message goes to the child? And the child is going to tend to play out the message that's given. Julie has a really fabulous poster. And do you happen to have I Am Somebody handy, Julie, that you might share with us?
No, actually, I was looking for that. I found, you know, my promise to myself and my promise to you, but I don't have that other one I was looking for.
I have it.
Okay, go for it. Please.
Who am I? I am somebody. I am bright, capable, and lovable. I'm teachable and learn easily. I tell the truth and am a gentle listener. I respect myself and others. I'm cooperative and responsible for my feelings and choices. I see the highest and best in myself and others and support that with my thoughts, words, and actions. I use time wisely because it is valuable. I am the best me I can be each day. I am somebody. I am love.
It's an awesome piece of work, Julie, for you to have created that and given it to kids, especially kids in inner city schools where you taught at the kindergarten and grade one level, to give them a different message about themselves. Jeannie and I went into a prison 3 or 4 years ago in Arizona, in Tucson, and In Tucson, Arizona, they start putting kids in prison at 9 years of age. And when we asked the question of these kids, how many have ever held a newborn, and they responded, Jimmy made a list. And on the completion of that, we turn to the kids and say, now realize this is the list of words that describe who you are. And you could have heard a pin drop in the room. Because for most of these kids, and there were about, I don't know, what were they, about 160 there, Jeannie, something like that, 9 to 16 years of age. For these kids to be acknowledged as this list on the board, love, beauty, peace, serenity, purity. I mean, you could just see them. It was like they were sponges just absorbing that acknowledgement. And yet if our power person delivered messages to us about how we are less than love when under stress, the tendency will be to at least think, if not deliver those same messages to our children. And so, Julie, to have created that I am somebody is just such a gift to give children.
I want to point out that, Michael, you sell these beautiful little 3.5 by 5 cards that have the commitment on one side and who am I on the back. And I have a stack of those in my office and routinely give them out. And one of the things we've done with kids from 5 and 6 up is teach them a breathing and tapping technique and give them a copy of the card to put in their bedroom. And when they're feeling out of sorts, they can go into their bedroom and do that breath work and read that who am I until they're feeling better and get fabulous results, just like Julie said with the love chair, that they sometimes before too long decide this is a tool they can use of their own accord.
Absolutely. And to have a space where when the child is feeling out of sorts, where they know they can go, so it's awesome, but to have that space where they know that everybody, you know, if it's in the family, if it's in the school, everybody in the room, when we're in that space, it's kind of their safe space, and everybody is beaming love to them rather than the messages that too often parents deliver to their children is just a fabulous tool.
So much. Go ahead, Julie.
I think there are two voices. Somebody go ahead.
No, and let everybody know. I've edited that, and it's going to be in the new book.
Cool.
Yeah,
I don't
editing.
Have the latest.
Yeah, that's all right. I just wanted Tim to know that.
Maybe Jeannie, do you have the latest copy handy there?
I'm looking for it as we speak.
Okay.
And while I'm looking for that.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I just found something and went ahead and posted it, shared it on there. Why is this happening to me again? Facebook, when you all were talking about the love chair and the timeout chair and everything, there's the girl that sings their intro song, which is Mary Redonte. She had written, it's not hit the website yet. She's the one that wrote the song that we play at the beginning and the end of the radio show. And she had actually posted about a month or so ago that, well, I don't know why it's not popping up. Anyway, her boyfriend one morning, she said she was in a Mary meltdown, and he took her by the hand and took her in and sat her on some cushions in their living room and said, you know, the universe doesn't need your ungrounded energy right now. You need to stay here until you're reconnected, and gave her an adult timeout. And she said she absolutely loved it. And then once she got reconnected, then she went to work.
Very cool.
I will find it. You all go ahead and talk, and I'll find it here.
Okay.
Cool.
One of the things that I would like to interject, and that is when you were talking about rules, what I usually do is I sit down with the whole class and I go over the rules with the children, and if I work towards working together with them on the rules of the classroom so that they're in agreement with the rules, not that I impose the rules on them. These are the rules, you know, you have no say. I allow them to have a say, and then I explain my position of why I've chosen these rules, and then I ask them for some input. Actually, children sometimes come up with some input as far as the rules go, but when I'm sitting any kind of thing like that going on in my classroom or even, you know, in the household, I want their cooperation and their agreement so that it's not something that appears to be imposed, but rather that we came together, we decided this was okay, and we came into an agreement and we're okay with it. And it seemed to work much better. And one of the things that was an effort for me is to mean what I say and say what I mean. And when I was working with parents, they had a lot of difficulty with that. They had difficulty with being authentic, with really sticking to it. It was almost like the children were able to keep coming at them, keep coming at them, and after a while kind of wore down their energy. So that's where I would always myself go back to the forgiveness process, doing the worksheets, so I can come from a place of being empowered and have that strength to actually mean what I say and say what I mean. And we agreed on these rules, and I'm going to, you know, back these rules.
Pull off that note, Julie, we use something similar. The co-creating process, children are powerful, and they need consistent reflection back about that very thing. And the kids that are generally having the most power struggles or really fighting back in order to see their power are the ones that are not seeing their power. And so they're having more need to know themselves as powerful. And so they're creating, or parents and the child or myself and my own children, when that is happening, there's more of a tendency to pull into the power struggles. And simply having a ritual around conflict in your home for resolving conflict together is just an amazing thing to lean into. One thing we have is we call it the crazy things list. And it's, and when rituals can be playful, that is a child's first language. So we call it the crazy things list. And you come up with ideas to solve the solution, and they're really funny ideas. And somewhere in the creation of the funny ideas come the actual ideas that could really work. And just in the process of sitting down, getting a piece of paper, and co-creating these ideas and writing them down, there is team and harmony. And generally, with my children, I find they come up with the best ideas. And they're ideas that are workable and that I wouldn't have thought to put out on the table. But they put it on the table, and because they put it on the table, they get behind it. And they wanted to succeed. They're really invested now in their idea being the solution. So when the challenging circumstance comes up and we remember the solution, they get right in line with it because they created it and we co-created it. So that is one really powerful, easy tool for resolving conflict. And you can call it anything you want. And we call it the crazy things list in my house.
Good idea. Excellent.
We're getting down to just the last few seconds of the show, so we're going to have to close out, but perhaps we can set a tone for next Monday's show, and that is when you bring that up, what I think happens when a child is not empowered, when a child is not supported in being in its power, and the parent has never experienced being in their power, then they confuse strength with power, and that's where it comes from. Oh, I have strength, and they get confused about strength being power. So maybe we can look into that one in next Monday's show. In the meantime, we appreciate each of you for being here as presenters, and we appreciate every set of ears that is here to hear it. Please share the show. Go to our Facebook page and do a like on it. You can download the show within a few minutes, and you can go to our website for that link. We appreciate you. Have a blessed day. Give the greatest gift you can possibly give. Have the best year yet of your eternal life. Blessings. Bye.